Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Wheelock, Judge Flory, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes Jr. presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Tuesday, July 16th, 2024. We have four cases on our calendar for today set for oral argument via Zoom. The first of which is A24-0298, Candace Martinez versus LM General Insurance Company. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant if you so choose. This is being live streamed via Zoom. It is also being recorded. However, no other recordings of this proceeding are allowed. Counsel, if for some reason we run into any technical difficulties, we will manage that appropriate to make sure that both parties have the appropriate amount of time for your arguments. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
Thank you, Your Honors. Michael Bryant representing Candace Martinez. This is a it's very strange case in the sense of in probably 99% of cases that would involve a motorcycle, there would be no issue whatsoever about whether there'd be no fault involved. The facts in this case are different. The facts in this case takes it out of a simple motorcycle collision and instead puts it in the situation where my client, as she laid on the road, was run over by the vehicle as the vehicle tried to take off. Because of that, it's our position that she is entitled to no-fault benefits under her policy because she's no longer on the motorcycle. And that's the different event here. In looking at the court's order, I think the court made a mistake in its definition of using the word pedestrian as if a person had to walk to the position in order to get hit. I think that's heading off in a direction that's unneeded. The only issue is my client's laying on the road and gets run over by a truck, and that's coverage. If we give examples in the brief of circumstances where a person could be sleeping on a bench, and if the bench gets hit by a car, wouldn't matter, they would be covered. And so that's what's
counsel, if I could stop you there, I have two comments or observations, and actually maybe one observation and one question. I realize that you laid out some alternative scenarios, but those aren't the facts before us. So those are just hypotheticals. And second, you question the use of the district court's use of relying on a different dictionary definition of pedestrian rather than applying, as you argue, common sense. But courts regularly rely on dictionary definitions. So why would that be error for the district court to rely on a dictionary definition of pedestrian?
The reason, I'll start with the first part. The reason why we use the hypotheticals is to point out the dangers of using that definition. Because if you go with that definition, you could end up taking out a whole number of other potential scenarios that would definitely be covered by the No-Fault Act. I don't think there'd be a question about that. Going specific to our case, the definition gets off in a direction that isn't even needed to go. The question is, was a person injured by a motor vehicle, and does one of the exceptions apply? When she's laying on the road, she's run over, she gets her leg, the femur fractured, and that's the only issue. And how she got there or the definition isn't even needed as far as that part goes.
I have a question with respect to what evidence we look at, because in your brief, you rely on the complaint, but a complaint, in order for it to be considered a fact for summary judgment purposes, has to be proved by evidence in the, has to be proved by evidence in the record. And there's no affidavit of any kind to support the complaint. So can we even consider the complaint in our review?
I think you have to consider the complaint because that's where the basis is. That's where it starts. But beyond that, we have the Fairview record that talks about the leg fracture and talks about the subsequent encounter. That's when the person leaves and runs her over. So we do have enough in the record to get us to the point where we should be able to go in front of a jury and have a jury look at these facts.
Are you relying on the medical records there?
Correct.
Okay, but the medical records talk about a motorcycle accident, motorcycle versus auto, a motorcycle crash. What in the record indicates, would support your argument?
Well, there's three things. Is it starts off as a motorcycle accident, so that's going to be what's there because that's what starts it. Second, the Fairview records talk about a subsequent encounter, so it's something different than the motor vehicle accident. And third, it's the actual broken femur itself. That's when she's run over by the vehicle, run over by the tire.
Is there anything in the medical records, Mr. Bryant, that indicates what the timing was as opposed in terms of when she was struck, when the motorcycle was struck by the car, right, the motor vehicle, and when the motor vehicle then ran back over her and caused those injuries? Is there anything in the medical records that provides details about the sequence and the timing of the events?
Well, sequence, yes, because the subsequent event happens after the motorcycle, after the while she's on the motorcycle. So sequence, yes. Timing, no, because it's relatively quick, but I don't know that there's nothing that indicates how much time. And if there's a separation enough that there's a subsequent event, that to me is all you need for the no-fault act to be triggered. Are there any other questions or?
Not at this time.
Okay, I will at this point hold and wait till for my rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes and we'll get the timer set up for you. And you may begin. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing.
Thank you, Your Honors. Nicole Winan on behalf of the Respondent Insurance Company. May it please the court and counsel, respondent was properly granted summary judgment in this case because it is undisputed that plaintiff was injured in a motorcycle accident. What appellant asked this court to do is either ignore or rewrite the requirements of Rule 56 of the Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure, take a leap of faith, and rely on their message without having submitted one piece of evidence to support the picture they are trying to paint. As it stands, appellant has supplied the mere averments set forth in her complaint and nothing more. And as Your Honor Reyes pointed out, that is insufficient without some other piece of evidence in the record to support those averments or allegations. The mandate of Rules 56.01 requires the court shall, a mandatory thing, grant summary judgment if the movement shows there is no genuine issue as to any material fact and the movement is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Both parties agree to the applicable law here. Minnesota's No-Fault Automobile Insurance Act does not provide for no-fault benefit when the person seeking no-fault benefits was injured in a motorcycle accident. No fact exists in the record before this court to suggest that appellant was injured in any other way but in a motorcycle accident. Counsel points out to reference to a subsequent encounter. Although there isn't any evidence in the record to suggest this, medical records, when they say subsequent encounter, means we've seen her before, and this is our subsequent encounter with the same issue. It isn't to relate to the facts of the underlying reason why she's there. It is medical jargon to indicate that this is not the first time we've seen her or an initial encounter. It's a subsequent encounter. So he is misreading that in the records. To answer Your Honor's question about whether there is anything in the records to suggest a sequence of events or even that she was run over at all in this incident is completely absent. The medical records simply refer to a motorcycle accident and or a motorcycle versus maybe automobile or car, I don't know exactly how they put it, accident. There is nothing to suggest even what counsel is presenting as fact, and that is that she was run over by this other vehicle. There's simply no evidence to support that. To properly address our assertion of the undisputed fact that appellant was injured in a motorcycle accident, Rule 56.03 required appellant to cite to, and I quote, particular parts of materials in the record, including depositions, documents, electronically stored information, affidavits, stipulations, admissions, interrogatory answers, or other materials. And those have to set forth facts that would be admissible in evidence. Nowhere in that list is simply what allegations are asserted and not proven in a complaint. Rule 56.05 supports the district court summary judgment decision and specifically says if a party fails to properly address another party's assertion of fact, as required by Rule 56.03, the court may be consider the fact undisputed for purposes of the motion. So in this case, undisputed fact that plaintiff was injured in a motorcycle accident, nothing more. C, grant summary judgment if the motion and supporting materials, including the facts considered undisputed, show that the movement is entitled to it. Respondent is entitled to summary judgment in this case. The supporting materials come directly from the medical professionals caring for appellant's injuries as set forth in her medical records, which are admissible under the rules of evidence. All of whom, her medical providers, state that appellant was injured in a motorcycle accident. Considering the hypothetical scenarios presented by appellant would require this court to engage in academia of what ifs, for which insufficient information is available, and appellant frankly invites this court to dive headfirst down a slippery slope. What is enough? Under the Minnesota No Fault Act, only a person that suffered injuries arising out of maintenance or use of a motor vehicle, or as a result of being struck as a pedestrian by a motorcycle, has a right to basic economic benefits or no-fault benefit. Here, there's no allegation that plaintiff was actually struck by a motorcycle. So really, we're simply considering whether she was injured as a result of the maintenance or use of a motor vehicle. Motor vehicle by statute explicitly excludes motorcycles. The definition says as every vehicle other than a motorcycle or other vehicle with fewer than four wheels. Even under appellant's hypothetical set of facts, there is no specific point in time when the motorcycle versus motor vehicle accident, which we all agree does not entitle her to no-fault benefit, stopped and something else began. We don't know what that something else is, again, because we don't have evidence to suggest it. An act of independent significance, and I quote that, act of independent significance must occur for the causal link in no-fault cases to be broken. And that comes from Continental Western Insurance Company versus Klug or Klug, K-L-U-G. The site for that is 415 Northwest 2nd, 876, and that is a Minnesota Supreme Court case from 1987. If evidence suggested by appellant, or if evidence did suggest that the appellant was run over by the motor vehicle as she lay on the ground, and if there were evidence that appellant's injuries were solely because of being run over, neither of which is true, her injuries would still stem from the fact that she was thrown from her motorcycle in the course of a motorcycle accident. There is nothing to break that chain of events. Not
so,
one.
Counsel, in his brief, opposing counsel argues that this is actually a question of proximate cause and actually a fact question for the jury. Is Klug determinative here, or Klug? Is it binding in terms of how we approach this question?
Yes, it is. So this is not a causation question, as would typically be in a negligence case. So this is not a negligence case. This is based completely on the no-fault statute. The standard for no fault and whether it applies is statutorily defined and therefore a question of law. Whether somebody is entitled to something under a statute is a question of law. And the law in no fault indicates that causation is a legal question for the jury. I did quote that in my brief. I just need to pinpoint. So again, yes, that comes from Plug, and then also I've cited to Strope, 481 Northwest 2nd at 855. So proximate cause standard that applies in a negligence case or a tort case is not what is applied in a no-fault benefits case under the no-fault statute. And the case law I've cited does indicate that causation is the first question that the court must decide as a matter of law, and that is whether the injuries were the result of the maintenance or use of a motor vehicle. In this case, there is no independent act that would have put appellant on the ground to get run over if she did in fact get run over, which we don't know. That's pure speculation on this record, other than the motorcycle accident. And so even if this court were to accept as true the hypothetical that appellant has put before it, she would not be entitled to no-fault benefits. For all of those reasons, Your Honors, I would just ask that you affirm the district court's decision to grant us summary judgment. And if there are no other questions, I will resign or stop at this point.
Thank you, counsel. It looks like there are not any more questions. So Willie, we'll turn it back over to appellant. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd absolutely disagree with the analysis there on Klug. They use that analysis to come to the conclusion that there's no way possible that a person could ever receive no-fault benefits if at some point the motorcycle was involved. And while I totally have granted, and I started off by granting, that in probably 99% of the cases, that would be true. This case is different, and that's where the definition or the wording of the subsequent event is important. Now, I think
but
that
Mr. Bryant, doesn't the Klug case inform us that, in fact, whether an injury arises out of the use of a motor vehicle is a question of law? It's not a question of fact, and aren't we bound by that?
I think the starting point would be, was a vehicle involved? So I would agree with that point, and that therefore the case law about someone who comes out and batters somebody that the court used to get there is significant. But here, if we've got the subsequent event of a person getting their legs run over by a motor vehicle, it gets taken care of and it doesn't prevent us from recovery. Klug isn't the connection that says there's no way this could ever happen, because it did happen. It's not a hypothetical. It actually did happen. It was the subsequent event that took place.
One of the things that I think makes this case unusual from my view as an appellate court judge is the lack of development of the factual record here. It's unusual that we don't see depositions of the parties who have firsthand knowledge of the incident, or affidavits or things like that. You know, in terms of whether there was a subsequent act here, to me, that's where I'm struggling the most with your argument, is there's no facts in the record other than the unverified allegations in the complaint. How do we get around that? And why wasn't the factual record better developed?
No, I think that's more of a product of it being a no-fault case versus an ordinary car accident case. But I would say that the record, the Fairview records, the finding of the subsequent event and the femur being broken, I think that's enough to get us to move forward. It gets us beyond that. That even if that's just a little bit, that's enough, because everything gets taken in the best picture for the non-moving party. And I would submit that that is enough evidence to put us there, Your Honor. Could there be more? I absolutely agree. Would I love for there to be more? Yes. But when it's all said and done, I think that's enough, and that gets us beyond summary judgment.
How do you respond, counsel, to the argument that the subsequent event is just the medical terminology for the subsequent meeting with appellant?
Well, I think the argument that was made was subsequent event means some kind of prior event, that it's subsequent to something else that happened, as if my client had broken her femur in the past, as if the next words were, this is the second time we've seen her break her femur. No, the wording is that there's a motorcycle accident, then there's a subsequent event, and then the discussion about the femur. So I would submit that that runs in a chain that's enough to get us beyond summary judgment, but consistent with what took place in this case. Other than that, I had one more thing I guess I wanted to look at. No, I think I think I covered it. So on that. So are there any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you both for your oral argument and your briefing on this matter. We appreciate it. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.